This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. 1 year ago, 16-year-old Kyle Plush was found dead inside his van at Seven Hills School. The teen had become trapped when a seat flipped, smothering him. Before he died, Plush made two calls to 911 using voice command on his iPhone, but Cincinnati police officers never located him. His body was found hours later. Since then, there has been much discussion on policy changes that would aim to ensure that such a tragedy never happens again. So where do things stand now? Let's discuss with Cincinnati City Councilwoman Amy Murray. Welcome, Amy.
Thank you so much.
Cincinnati City Councilman Greg Landsman. Welcome, Greg.
Great to be here.
And WVXU reporter Jay Hanselman. Welcome back, Jay.
Hi there.
If you have questions or comments on this topic, give us a call, 513-419-7100. You can also email talk at wvxu.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll look for your comments and your tweets and try to get some of those in the show as well. Jay, let's start with you. This is the one-year anniversary of Kyle Plush's death. Tell us who he was.
Kyle was a sophomore at Seven Hills School, and on this particular day, school was out. He had gone back to his van to get tennis equipment, and he entered the van through the side door, and as he leaned over the rear row of seating, it basically collapsed on him and trapped him in the back of the van. And he couldn't use his hands for the way he was trapped, so he was using his iPhone was in his pocket, and he was using the Siri app to attempt to call, 911 to get help.
And then what happened over the course of those calls?
His first call was at 3:14. Dispatch did get enough information that they were able to, at least an approximate location, to send police officers. Those police officers, for various reasons, weren't able to find Kyle, and his second call to 911 was at 3:34. Each call, especially on playback after the fact, when you listen to the calls, I mean, there was enough information in those calls that he could have been located. But for various reasons and various breakdowns unfortunately that didn't happen.
So what did the investigation that followed about the way the city operators handled the situation, what did that reveal?
I think there was the thing that I think was frustrating to a lot of people. Normally in a situation like this, you want one thing to blame. And in this case, there were just multiple breakdowns with the communication center, with what the police officers did. And, there was plenty of blame and fault that were spread across, several agencies and several people.
And we're going to bring our council members in just a moment. But Jay, you're a reporter who spends a lot of time at Cincinnati City Hall. Where are things in terms of litigation?
That's a good question. The family has hired a well-known attorney, Al Gerhardstein. He has requested records from the Cincinnati Police Department. He's also requested records and information from city council members, the mayor. And as to what's going to happen with that, I think we don't know yet because we've asked and they say it's under review and that's all they will say. And Al and the family have declined any comment, on the anniversary.
Councilwoman Amy Murray, one area that the city addressed is training for dispatchers. Two investigations cleared the 911 operators of mishandling that tragedy, the calls from Kyle Plush, but there were some issues. Can you tell us about what was addressed and what was changed?
Sure. We have made a lot of changes in the past year. So under the areas of training and as far as staffing, so part of it is we didn't have the staffing levels that we needed, and we had mandatory overtime. But so one of the things that we've done is we've increased the staff and we've increased the training of the staff so that we have the right numbers there. For example, in 2017, in dispatch world, you want people to be able to, 911 operators to pick up the phone within 10 seconds. And in 2017, we were at about a 42% answer rate within 10 seconds. For the first half of this year in 2019 up until now, we are at 97%. So we have made huge leaps in the past 2 years as far as with training and with having staffing so that people are up to speed of what they need to do. We've brought in some new technology, but we really did it thoughtfully because if you bring in technology but you're not able to train the folks on it, then it serves no purpose and it can even be a danger. So really, there's been a lot more training going on. And there's a tool that they're using now that marks every time someone's had any of the training. And it's really quantified now so that they make sure what training is available and that every dispatcher has it. Because you think about it, if someone's on pregnancy leave or someone is off and you do the training during a two-week period and that person has missed some critical training of a new technology, we need to make sure that no matter what, when they come back 6 months later, they have that training. So we have a whole system set up now for training.
So what were the staffing numbers prior to the changes?
So I don't have them in front of me, but what we had under call 911 and call takers, we were down significantly. I think out of 60 that we're supposed to have in each, we were down by more than 20. And so we've really made those changes. That's just approximate. So, and part of it is the hiring process would take 6 months. And so we've streamlined the hiring process. So that's not taking 6 months. So we're able to get classes in quicker and making sure that it's the right people that are there. So we're still a little short on staffing, but not anywhere near where we were a year or 2 years ago.
Was there concern expressed, Councilman Landsman, about the staffing situation in the dispatch center prior to becoming such an important topic after the death of Kyle Plush?
Yeah, there was, I mean, you know, it's been a year since the tragic loss of Kyle. And, you know, there had been prior to the Kyle's death, there had been a lot of work and concern and talk about what needed to be done at the call center. And all of that really intensified after we lost Kyle. And, over the course of the year, Councilwoman Murray is right. I mean, we've got new leadership, which is a big deal to change the leadership at the call center. We have most, if not all of the critical new technology that we needed. We have completely overhauled the policies, the protocols associated. So, for example, you know, one of the issues was this question about what happens when you don't know what the situation is. It's sort of unknown trouble is the, and we now dispatch both police and fire in a situation like that. There's been a ton of training on language, so everyone knows exactly what they're talking about. People are over communicating. There was glitches in the system that have been resolved. The way in which the headphones, were used and how to turn them up, that's something that's been resolved. Same with a quote-unquote silent call, which played out in this particular situation.
Dispatchers at the time thought that it was a silent call.
So they everyone's had additional training on what to do in those circumstances, and there are new protocols, which obviously are going to make a big difference. And then this text to 911, where you don't have to make the call, you can text in, and then something that Councilwoman Murray has been working on, which is the smart 911, so people can. And everyone should do that if they're at home listening at some point, go on, just go to Smart 911 and register everyone in your family so that we know as much about you as humanly possible. And then to the staffing, all of the staffing pieces have been done in terms of hiring new managers, hiring quality assurance folks, additional supervisors, and 30 new employees, which makes a big difference to be ostensibly fully staffed at all times. And so those changes are really important. And then I'd just say one last quick thing is that, we're now at the moment where we have to transition from meaningful reforms to really serious continuous improvement. So in addition to being really at the top of the list in terms of answering calls quickly, and she's right, Councilwoman Murray's right, we're at 98% in terms of picking up the phone within 10 seconds. But then how quick, what's the measure in terms of did we get all the information? Did we dispatch it correctly? How quickly did we arrive on the scene? And how excellent was the service delivered?
And I want to point out, you were talking about the history. Prior to last year, I would say for at least a decade, the Emergency Communication Center had problems. And when I started covering it was under the control of the police department, they just thought, well, that didn't work, so let's bring in an outside, let's put it under civilian control. They did that for a few years, and the problems didn't remedy, so we went back to the police department being in control of the ECC. And then, and that continued up until last April, and I think it was in May or June of last year. It's now back under civilian leadership. But the problems were the same. There was a high turnover rate, high burnout rate. Honestly, this is not a fun job. I know a couple people who are 911 operators, and it's a high-stress job. Some days are pretty tame, but other days are pretty wild, and you experience sometimes the worst things that happen in society, and you're right there on the front line answering those calls.
513-419-7100, if you'd like to weigh in. Let's check out the phone lines now. We have Carl on.
I'm doing well. How are you?
We're doing well also. You have a question or comment for us?
Yes, I do. So I guess I'm an engineer, and my first thought here is why no one's talked about or looked at the vehicle design itself. I actually own a van that sounds very similar, that has the stone row seating in a third row, and those seats are spring-loaded and weigh about 80 pounds apiece. So I'm wondering, has anybody done anything to talk to the vehicle manufacturer and ask them why this is even possible?
Well, I'll note that the Cincinnati Inquirer reporters Sharon Coolidge and Alex Coolidge reported this week on whether a tragedy like Kyle Plush's death could happen again today. And one piece of that report said that the problem with the seat in the Honda Odyssey, which was the vehicle that Kyle was using, that has not been fixed. But they cited the National Highway Traffic and Safety Administration and the automaker Honda, who contend that there haven't been enough similar complaints to, quote, justify further investigation, Carl.
Okay.
Carl, I appreciate the question, and it does need to be fixed. And I will say, from our standpoint, it was one of those moments where you know that everyone is going to be zeroed in on fixing the piece that we can, which is the call center. And I will say that the Plushes have been fully committed to saying, look, we want to be part of making this call center the best in the country, and doing all of the things that would be necessary, and so that we can then take it across the country and be part of major transformation so that this never happens ever again to anyone.
Well, and technology changes so rapidly. So I went down to an emergency communications conference in Nashville, and Jill Plush was there also. And at that time, it was one of the times where we learned about Smart 911. And I think this is probably one of the most transformational things that we've done in the past year to help people and to save lives. And I know that Councilmember Landsman mentioned it, but I really want to make sure that people understand what it is. Today, a majority of folks, when they call 911, they're calling from their cell phone. If you call from your landline and the 911 operator is sitting there, they have your name and your address. So if you have a fire, if you have an emergency, they have some information. If you call from your cell phone, we have absolutely no information on you whatsoever. And so you can go in and put as much or as little information as you want. But what we ask people to do is go to smart911.com, and you can sign up for your entire family, but at least give us your name, address, and a contact. Because if you call 911 and you're in an emergency situation and it gets disconnected, we always try and call back. And for example, in the Kyle Plush case, he called back twice. And in other situations, we'll have people call back. And if we can't reach them, there's nothing we can do because we have no information on them. But if you've put in information into Smart 911, then we'll know who your contact is, whether it's your mother, your dad, a spouse, and we're able to call them and say, we've received this call from your loved one. Can you help us find out where they are? So it's absolutely imperative. It really can save lives if you go to smart911.com.
We'll have a link to that information at wvxu.org. When people supply that information about themselves, should they be concerned about privacy issues?
So we are told from the vendor, and this is being used countrywide, that like for our police department and our 911, they only see it when you call in. So when you call in, it prompts it to come up on the screen, and it only stays on the screen during the duration of that call, or I believe for up to 40 minutes maximum. So it is not used within the city of Cincinnati in any other manner or fashion.
And the good thing about that too, as Amy said, it's nationwide. So if you're out of town and you're in an area that has Smart 911 and you call 911, that information is still going to show up. Let's say you're in Atlanta and you use your cell phone, they have Smart 911. All that information that you've supplied here is going to...
Can I say one more thing? I mean, as complicated as the 911 system is, it requires a ton of reform, a ton of changes, continuous improvement, all this work that's going on, but it also requires us to stay on this year in and year out. And so one of the things that I've been really thankful for is the city manager's willingness to give us an update. When the council and the mayor are, we're all together on Wednesday, and every Wednesday he gives us an update on progress, you know, as it relates to the action plan, things that still need to happen. And that keeps it front and center, which is not something we've done with any other issue. So that we're constantly talking about, and that means that I talked to the city manager today. It's, you know, hopefully next year we will still be talking about it every week. And that's how you get to the place where this will never happen again.
The number to join the conversation is 513-419-7100. We continue our discussion on the one-year anniversary of the death of 16-year-old Kyle Plush and the work to make changes so that something similar doesn't happen again after this short break. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Today marks 1 year since the death of 16-year-old Kyle Plush, who suffocated after becoming trapped by a seat that flipped in his van. His two desperate calls to 911 using voice command did not lead police to him. What's changed since then? We continue now with Cincinnati City Councilwoman Amy Murray, Cincinnati City Councilman Greg Landsman, and WVXU reporter Jay Hanselman. Join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We got a question via Twitter from @Andesto, who wants to know if anyone has blamed the school for any part of this incident. So this happened in a parking lot at Seven Hills School. And I guess that question is about whether the investigation led to how school officials handled one of their students being trapped in a van on their property.
So my children went to Seven Hills School, so I'm very familiar with the property. And, you know, everyone that was involved that day, your heart just goes out to them because they have a great school security team there. And the officer that was assigned, the school security person that was assigned there, he is there every day helping kids get in and out. And so from his statements and from what we've heard, he was able to look based on the information that he had received. You know, he only had the information that was given to him. He didn't have additional information. So, you know, he looked as hard as he could to find what was wrong, but it was based on the information he had. So, you know, it's certainly a tragedy. And part of that is just he didn't have the correct information to try and find Kyle.
Amy, where does it stand with the, I know the there was a lot of talk at this incident about the phase two of the latitude and longitude, the coordinates of Kyle's cell phone. And at that time, if they had dispatched the fire department, it would have shown up on a mapping system. They were trying to get that mapping system for the police car. So where is that process? Are they still working on that? Has that happened?
Yes. So what it's called is Rapid SOS. And Apple phones came out last year with a system in your phone that can help them pinpoint, identify exactly where someone is. But your 911 call center has to have the compatible equipment. So we're working on the logistics of that right now so that it will be working. We have the finances for it, so that should be coming out shortly. So that is Rapid SOS. But we've also trained our staff. And so because they can pinpoint within a not pinpoint, but they can give you an area of where the call came from. So we've really worked with our police, fire, and 911 to better use those tools. But we do have the Rapid SOS coming out, so we will be able to pinpoint it.
Jay, as the city was investigating this incident and this death of Kyle Plush last year, the Fraternal Order of Police pushed back a little bit against some of this. Can you give us the background on that?
I mean, they pushed back a little on what they thought were ongoing investigations. The officers sat down for at least, I want to say, two interviews. There was some thought that after the independent reports were released in November, and there was some thought that there would be further interviews of the police again, the officers involved, after those internal or those independent reports were done. And the FOP pushed back on that and said, you know, if they were asked to do it again, they would probably grieve it as a contract issue. And I think even the city manager said that the city would probably not be successful if they tried to push that because the, you know, basically the officers had already been disciplined. They had been through the process. And once that process was complete, that was the basically they had one bite at the apple and they'd already done that.
Well, let me open it up to the council members then. Did the position of the Fraternal Order of Police during this internal investigation within the city, did that complicate matters from your legislative processes?
I don't think so. I mean, they have a role to play in terms of standing up for their officers. Though I will say they were interviewed multiple times, as Jay mentioned, and I think everyone who can take a step back from the events of the day, you realize to Councilwoman Murray's point, they're just everyone. There's just your heart breaks for them because they. If they had just one more piece of information, they would have been able to, potentially save Kyle. And so, you look at each individual person separately, and your heart breaks for them, not like it does for the family, of course, who lost their son. I do think that the key for us is to A, make sure this never happens again. Ever to anyone, and B, give this city, the region, the best 911 system in the country, and that is going to require, in addition to all these changes, a real commitment to continuous improvement, where we not only start to measure and get better at how quickly we pick up the call, but we start to measure and get better at how well we collected the information, how well we dispatched, did we get the dispatch right, police, fire, sometimes both now, how quickly did we arrive on the scene and how well were services delivered. And that will put us in the sort of driver's seat in terms of being the best in class around the country and giving people the best services possible.
And there was a policy change, I understand, because at the time it was reported that one of the responding officers did not get out of the cruiser while searching for the location of Kyle Plush. That policy has changed where officers are to get out of the vehicle now?
Yeah, although the biggest issue here is that it was identified as unknown. There are two big issues. One is not everyone was entirely clear on, how it was recorded in the system. Now we're over communicating, and everyone's been trained on all the lingo. Further trained, I mean, it's gone beyond what other systems do. And when we don't know, right, when there's just some uncertainty about what's happening, we dispatch both police and fire.
And Michael,
sure, go ahead.
And I just want to bring up also because the Plush family has been working so hard and really looking at Emergency Communication Center nationwide to see what they can do to advocate for better 911 service throughout the whole United States. But one thing they've done is they've started the Kyle Plush Answer the Call Foundation. So I wanted to bring that up because that's one way that they have of trying to give back and to help people understand better. So if people have a chance to go to the Answer the Call Foundation website, I know that they certainly would appreciate it.
I think we've got time for one last phone call. Let's check in with Mel on the line. Hey, Mel, we're short on time. What's your question or comment?
Okay. I was a firefighter EMT for over 20 years, and that time I was a dispatcher. And from what I've heard about what the call was, one, there was an entrapment. That calls for fire department. Two, there was trouble breathing. That calls for EMS. So I don't think that it was properly dispatched.
Mel, we appreciate the comment very much.
And I'm sure just quickly to Mel's point, now in a situation where we don't know, we dispatch everyone.
It was also announced recently that a new pavilion at Stanbury Park in Mount Washington will be named the Kyle Plush Pavilion, and construction on that is expected to start later this year. Our thanks to Cincinnati City Council members Greg Landsman and Amy Murray and WVXU reporter Jay Hanselman for joining us today. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. I'm Michael Monks. Subscribe to our podcast at wvxu.org.